Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering where we take a look back at the big stories of the week. I'm joined by Mandy Johnston, CEO of the Irish Offshore Operators Association, Martin Kenny, Sinn Féin's Justice Spokesman and TD for Sligo Leitrim, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary and member of the Dáil's COVID-19 Committee, and Brenda Power, Irish Daily Mail and Sunday Times columnist. And thank you all very much for joining me this morning. Sure. I'm going to start with the controversy that has been running all week really at this stage over the attendance by Sinn Féin senior members at Bobby Storey's funeral in Northern Ireland, because there has been a statement, as you will have heard on this show, from Michelle O'Neill in the last hour or so about her attendance at that funeral. And Martin Kenny, she spends a lot of time in the statement justifying herself being there. And then one line saying that she is also concerned that grieving families are experiencing more hurt over recent days. And she says, "I am sorry for that." Is that not just saying, "I'm sorry that you felt bad"?
I don't think so. I think the reality is that, you know, Irish people do funerals in a particular way. And in the past number of months, it has developed. And I know certainly in every parish around me, when somebody dies, people come out and they stand on the roadside. They follow them into the graveyard. I was at a funeral myself the other day in Drumshambo. And that's what, you know, several, probably dozens, hundreds of people done.
Were there 1,800 people there?
Well, there weren't 1,800 people there. But then again, you know, I'm sure there are funerals in different places where there are very large attendances, where there's particular tragedies or people that are very well known. And
what are you referring to there?
Well, I'm referring to funerals where there are very large funerals, and this is one of those very large funerals. I do understand that, of course, in the context of the pandemic and, you know, the turmoil that people have been in over the past number of months, it has been difficult for people, and we all know that. Having said that, you know, there's another side to this which is very political, and people are you know, running at it in that way, and that's fine. You know, we're adults, we'll deal with that.
Was it a mistake to go?
No, I don't think it was a mistake to go. I don't think it's ever a mistake for to do what's the right thing. Everyone has to make a personal choice in regard to that, for to attend somebody's funeral for a person they know and a person they have respect for.
But hold on, both Michelle O'Neill and Mary Lou MacDonald are acknowledging today that people have been hurt by their attendance.
People have been hurt.
So now they know that. Can they not say it was a mistake to go because they have hurt people by their attendance? They're acknowledging that at least.
I don't think they're acknowledging that it was a mistake to go. I think what they're saying is that the funeral happened, that an awful lot of people from West Belfast and across Ireland, you know, had huge respect for Bobby Storey, attended that funeral. They are close friends of Bobby Storey's. They were there in regard to respect him and respect his family. It was done in a socially distanced manner. People do so outdoors. They stand on the street. They go into the graveyard. That's what people have been doing in every parish around the country. Many people have been talking to me in the last number of days saying, you know, this is what we're all doing. And they understand that. Now, of course, there's always the situation where people pass close past each other, etc. And, you know, when there's a large attendance and everything was done and that could possibly be done with the stewarding in cooperation with the PSNI for to make this as well run as possible and to ensure that it was done properly.
Jennifer Carr, McNeill, Martin Kenny says, and indeed many others in Sinn Féin have said this week, that everything possible was done to ensure that the rules were adhered to.
Well, Martin has just said that it was done in coordination with the PSNI, and I understand the PSNI are actually looking into the breaches of regulations by senior members of Sinn Féin in the Northern Ireland Executive who established those regulations. There are political choices that can be made here, and the political choice that was made by the leadership of Sinn Féin from Dáil Éireann was to travel to Belfast for a large funeral that was always going to be large, that had all of the organised hallmarks of Sinn Féin IRA funerals in the past. We saw people lining around the hearse lining the streets, and yes, people come out on the street. It's a more concentrated environment than Drumshambo, you might agree, and it was a very large funeral, and they knew that it would be a large funeral. It was an organised funeral that was protracted over multiple stages with a lot of set pieces. They knew it would be.
But
like,
as Martin
that.
Said, we have seen similar large funerals like that in the state in recent weeks.
Well, what I've seen is people who have suffered, who have not been able to have their own families and friends support them at the loss of loved ones. We've seen, as you say, people coming out on the street to support those families, but it couldn't possibly be compared. There are so many people across this island who have lost loved ones in the past couple of months, and they are feeling very hurt.
Why can't they be compared, though? Why can't you compare them?
Well, what are you comparing, sir?
Well, as Martin says, there have been large funerals. I saw Matt Carty, for example, on The Tonight Show talking about Garda Horkin's funeral.
The funeral of a serving guard killed in the line of duty.
Well, he was raising that as an issue, as a comparison, yes.
Yes, and the Minister for Justice attended that, and that was, and but the Taoiseach didn't attend it, and the President didn't attend it, and that's a massive state funeral, and one of the most tragic and serious things that can happen in this state. And you saw the outpouring from people all across the country, marking it in their own private ways, at socially distant Garda stations all around the country, a moment's silence, and not even the Taoiseach, not even the President, at those very unique moments where there's a state funeral of that kind, attended because it wasn't appropriate to do so. There's no way that the nature of that funeral, the murder of a serving Garda in the line of duty, can be compared to the murder of what Mary Lou McDonald described as her friend.
Okay, I want to bring the others in on this, but I don't know, do you want to respond to that, Martin?
Look, I mean, I understand there are people who are grieving and people who have been hurt through the pandemic, and I understand how they're, you know, somewhat annoyed in regard to that. But there's also a very political element to this. Our political opponents are jumping on this. And indeed, you know, Dublin Unionists and Fine Gael are all over this and have been for the past week. And we're used to that. And we will deal with it.
Okay, briefly, sorry, Jennifer.
The reason that this is a political holding to account of Sinn Féin, Sinn Féin don't like that. Sinn Féin aren't used to that. But if you want to be in Dáil Éireann and participate as the leader of the opposition, as you say, you should probably get used to being held to account as a normal political party. We in Fine Gael have said that we don't believe you are a normal political party. But if you want to engage in that way, then you are held to account.
All right, we have Brenda Power.
They voted for your party and they believe it.
All right, Brenda Power, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I just thought it was ironic there that Jennifer mentioned the fact that the funeral in question had all the traditional hallmarks of a Sinn Féin funeral, with one notable exception, of course, because there was a time when it was de rigueur to wear masks and indeed dark glasses at Sinn Féin funerals, IRA funerals, and they were noticeably absent on this occasion. To be honest, I think there's a measure of political expediency here, because as far as I could see, and it's very difficult to judge on the flat, but it did appear possible that people were, you know, reasonably socially distanced. The problem for Sinn Féin is, of course, that had this been any other event and any other party attending a funeral of a member of their extended family, they would have been the very first to have jumped all over them. I mean, witness the Sinn Féin conniptions when the Taoiseach sunbathed with three friends in Phoenix Park a month ago. I don't think this is quite the Dominic Cummings moment that it's been made out to be. However, I think, as always, it's the reaction. It's the reaction of the individuals involved that causes almost more difficulty than the action itself. So when Mary Lou McDonald came out and said, one of the marks of friendship and decency is how you say goodbye to people, suggests that everybody who adhered to the guidelines over the last 3 months and did not go to funerals and said goodbye to loved ones via Skype as they were dying of COVID-19 in a hospital were somehow not acting decently and not acting as true friends. And that was a big faux pas, as far as I can see.
OK, I do want to move on, but just briefly, Mandy, if your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think this speaks to the notion that there's one law for Sinn Féin and another law for everybody else. And that is the political problem that faces Sinn Féin as a result of this, and will allow their political opponents to make that charge. That said, do I think that this will affect the executive in Northern Ireland? I hope it doesn't. We've all seen how difficult it was to have those institutions up and running once they broke down the last time. I think the relationships are going well, and it's a very difficult and delicate time in Northern Ireland at the moment, and I hope that ultimately these issues are solved and they can get back down to business.
But there's another political issue in this, which is Mary Lou McDonald saying if she was Taoiseach she would go, you know, and this is, and it's time to move on and to perhaps look at more at who the person was. And there's a very good article in the Irish Times detailing the background of this person as well. You know, as Taoiseach I would go to the funeral of somebody who we know was involved in murders across this island and who we know was involved in
criminality. And this is also somebody who has passed away recently, yeah, Jennifer, so I don't really want to get into that.
Not appropriate to speak like that about the day.
We will move on. We're going to talk about the junior minister appointments, because there was a lot of concern and angst about all of that. Jennifer, were you unhappy to be looked over?
Not in the slightest. I have enough work to be getting on with, and I'm hoping to have a long career in politics, and perhaps there'll be an opportunity for me in the future, but I've plenty of work to be getting on with in the meantime. I'm only walked into the Dáil in February.
Would you be hoping for a committee chair?
I really haven't thought about that, Sarah. I have enough work to be getting on with. There's plenty of things like domestic violence and coercive control that I've been working on and will continue to work on no matter what office I hold, whether now or in the future.
Brenda, tell me your thoughts on what we've seen this week with Fianna Fáil in particular. Micheál Martin has had a very rocky time from his cabinet ministerial appointments to his junior ministerial appointments. What do you think of it?
You know, Sarah, I was watching that RTÉ documentary on the COVID-19 frontline responders, mostly women, I would suggest, who are earning less, they're taking home less a year than your average government minister makes in unvouched expenses. And, you know, not a whiff of self-pity, not a whiff of complaint from these women, mostly women, as I say. And then to turn on the radio and listen to men whinging about not getting the jobs they thought they were entitled to, not on the basis of their competence, not on the basis of their ability, not on the basis of any proven expertise in those particular areas. They wanted a job, big job, any job, because of their loyalty and because of their long service and because they delivered an extra seat in the constituency.
Well, I'm sure they also thought that they were able for the job, that they had ability to offer, I'm sure, as well as those factors.
I mean, what job? You know, it was kind of any job. I should have got a better job. I'm sorry, I am not in a position to feel any sympathy for them, A. And B, you know, when you look at how few women are represented in this cabinet, mm-hmm. you know, when the West of Ireland, they're crying about the fact that they haven't got a junior minister or a senior minister. And of course, you know, this whole complaint is predicated on the expectation that once you have a minister, your area will be preferred. I'm from the southeast, or when we last had a minister, and so we don't have a university, the port in Rosslare has been run down. You know, it is unfair, and I don't have any great expectation for this new administration to do anything other than do exactly as was done before, when I heard Norma Foley come out and say, new minister for education, first time in the Dáil, I'm going to do my best for Kerry. My heart sank. So I have no sympathy for any of them, none of them, and the whole system is rotten.
Mandy Johnson, you're smiling there.
Yeah, I've been involved in three announcements of cabinet, and they're never without controversy. I don't think I've seen quite this level of controversy though, and this time last week, if we take ourselves back, you would have expected Fianna Fáil were the party who were most anxious to get government started and most pro the programme for government. And then we were looking forward to fireworks between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the ending of civil war politics. But uniquely, Fianna Fáil have proven once again that they're entirely capable of doing that on their own, because the first week has been dominated by their own infighting, you know. And that stems from the lack of regional balance, yes, but also the expectation that build up around certain people getting their positions.
Like, so was that badly managed then from an expectation management point of view by Micheál, or indeed the people around him? Should there have been some attempt to make sure that Michael Moynihan wasn't absolutely certainly expecting a job, or that Dara Cleary was given some indication it might not be what he was expecting?
Yes, those two and many others actually, you know, they did nothing to try and contextualise that those expectations weren't going to be met. And I think that's something they will have learned from. They should have also learned a very basic lesson that when you're making an announcement at a government level like this, as leader, as Taoiseach, you need a map and a marker to say, is the country covered? And I understand what Brenda is saying about, you know, regional representation, but it is important from a cabinet point of view that the entire country is represented, and particularly for those two parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who have been accused in the recent past of being urban centric, that they should have been looking at a more regionally balanced mix. And I'm very surprised that they didn't do that from the outset, because coalition government is going to be about communicating and working together.
Yeah, but that was part of the reason that wasn't there, wasn't it? Because they didn't talk to each other before they announced cabinet appointments. Were you surprised at that?
It seems to be so. And yes, you know, coalition government, as I say, is about trust, it's about communication and understanding each other's bottom lines and red lines.
I want to bring Martin in on that, but just on that issue of communication, Jennifer, it doesn't bode well, does it?
Look, I think we have a new arrangement here, and we've had a number of months in negotiating a programme for government. We now just need to get on with the work of it. You know, I hear about the regional balance. You know, most of the junior ministers are balancing that out in some way. The reality is there are fewer jobs than there are constituencies, and we're trying to make appointments based on merit and just getting ahead and getting the job done. And we really just need to be focused on that. That's certainly what I'm focused on and what my Fine Gael colleagues are focused on, you know, from now forward. It's
okay.
Done now.
You're from Sligo Leitrim, yeah. Martin. Would you feel that the regional balance has been sorted out by the junior ministries?
I don't think so. And you know, it's not really about the people that do the job. For me, it's about, you know, the commitment of the government to deliver for the regions outside of the main urban centres. And that's, I think, what's sorely missing in all of this. I mean, the programme for government takes the whole department of rural development and puts it in with social protection, like a kind of an add-on to the dole, is how one person described it to me. And, you know, it just smacks of everything they do is about Dublin and about the main urban centres, and the West and the North West and areas which have huge potential, which need the investment, which need to develop, are just left on the back.
Well, you kind of see it now on the show yesterday, saying when you look at the evidence, that's not the case.
Well,
the jobs are being spread.
It actually is the case. And the reality The reality for people who live in my part of the world is, if we want our children to do as well as we do, we see them doing somewhere else. They have to leave. They have to go to the city or they have to go abroad. There is very, very little opportunities for graduates in the Northwest or indeed in rural areas. And rural Ireland has got huge potential. And we've seen that through this pandemic when people working from home, people have found new ways of surviving and new ways of building that potential. And I think if the correct investment was put into it, if the correct emphasis was put into it, we'd see that happen. Mm. I mean, in the first line in the programme for government where it talked about rural Ireland, it talked about the pressure on Dublin, relieving the pressure. It wasn't what potential rural Ireland had. It was in the context of how it could help Dublin, not how it could develop.
Yeah, and indeed, Jennifer Michael Ring, the former Minister for Rural Affairs, not happy with how this is all going. He had a big swipe at both Leo Varadkar and Pascoe Donoghue yesterday on the fact that he got elected before either of them and how long it took them to get elected. But he was also talking about his concerns over rural Ireland and what the Greens might try to do, in his view, to rural Ireland. And the fact that the department that he was heading is now with another department as such. It's being run by a minister with another portfolio.
Yeah, but we keep going back, and I mean, as Conor Skeynes, we keep going back to the emphasis that the planning framework, which is the first time we have that on a statutory basis, that places on places like Galway, Sligo, the Letterkenny area, pushing investment, pushing development to those areas precisely so that we can have jobs and communities built up and extended and developed and enhanced across those regions. And that's not just about relieving pressure on Dublin, that's just about a more balanced Ireland and a more balanced set of regions. Of course it is.
And Brenda?
But just to come back to the point I was making there, you know, Michael Ring was the very one, of course, when he was appointed Minister for Rural and Community Affairs in 2017, who said, I have money and I love spending it and I'm going to be spending it in Ballina, in Ballycastle and in Killala. I mean, you know, until you get away from the mindset that a minister will only prefer or is expected to prefer, is nearly obliged to prefer his own constituency, then you're going to have regions that will inevitably feel hard done by. This time, it's the West's turn to feel let down and to feel hard done by. You don't pick your doctor or your accountant on the basis of where they're from. Why is a government minister appointed? I do not accept that this is a system that we should be tolerating. I genuinely don't. I think a minister should be appointed on the basis of expertise and proven ability, not because of his or her address,
Mandy,
and constituency.
This navel-gazing will move on very quickly because look what's happened already. We've seen the central bank come out this morning. This is a crisis government. No matter what way you look at it, it's a government who are dealing with a health crisis, an economic crisis, a jobs crisis. Mm. And the first part of the week was taken up with the internal politics and all the machinations around that. Now they have to get down to business. We'll see a jobs plan coming out and then they'll work towards a budget in October. People don't want to hear about this. What the public want to hear about is, are the schools coming back? Are we allowed to travel?
Okay.
What's happening?
And I do want to get on to the schools coming back, but just briefly on last thing on the ministerial appointments, Jennifer, the lack of women at junior ministerial level. I know you're saying that you weren't bothered at all about not being picked, but there is an imbalance there, isn't there? Were you disappointed with it?
I'm disappointed about the number of women in the Dáil generally and at every level of politics and at every level of political leadership. We need more women. It is just completely imbalanced, the representation in the Dáil, and we need to do absolutely everything to encourage more women capable of taking seats.
Yeah, but does this encourage women when they see a list like that coming out with how many junior ministerial women were appointed? Two?
Look, we appointed all women to the Seanad. We have a Seanad leader. We appointed it
but
to
the people who have the power, the ministers and the junior ministers.
I think we're going to need to do more on
17 of them
on every level to encourage more women into politics. And look, I am a woman. Well,
I suppose my question is to you, does it encourage women when they see 2 out of 17 getting a job?
I think it is difficult. And there are too few women in the Dáil to be able to, who was it put it together, if all of the women in the government parties were appointed to ministerial office, it still wouldn't be close to 50%. And that's a reflection on the number of women in the Dáil.
We announced our front bench yesterday and almost half of them are women. You know, so that there is the opportunity there, and I think it's also very geographically spread. And that's not because for any other reason other than those people have got the ability to stand up and to do the job, and that's what we intend to do.
All right, Brenda, I want to come to you on the issue of schools then and reopening or not reopening or what's going to happen with it. What are your thoughts on what we've heard this week?
Well, I mean, I cannot be the only parent whose heart again sank when I heard it was Kieran Christie of ASDI saying, you know, the classrooms will be empty in September unless if the current social distancing guidelines persist. I mean, you know, as several parents have said to me, if teachers had been earning 350 a week on COVID payments since last March. They'd be back in the classrooms by now. It is quite, I suppose, instructive that they're clearly not designating themselves as an essential service and that they're going to hold off, it would appear, for as long as possible, returning to the classroom. And with all the knock-on effects that is going to have, and primarily, of course, on working mothers, I mean, be honest, the people who are going to have to adjust their working lives to accommodate children who are going to be home maybe a week a month or maybe 2 to 3 weeks a month are going to be women, and women at the lower end of the economic scale. But I mean, you know, the fact that the teachers seem to be, and I do believe this is the unions, I don't think that teachers themselves, at least teachers that I know, share these sentiments and this obstructiveness. But it does seem that they expect to be wrapped in cotton wool. I saw May Fanning of the National Parents Council saying they have to.
I can tell you right now, Brenda, we have a lot of teacher listeners who will object to that description of being wrapped in cotton wool.
May Fanning said teachers are going to have to step outside of their comfort zone and accept that there are considered and calculated risks that are going to have to be taken for the good of the nation's children.
Is that fair, Martin?
The ASTI saying, no, we're not coming back until we're 100% safe.
Look, I know where Brenda's coming from, but at the same time, I think really what's wrong here is we don't have clarity. I think that's the big problem. I think it's been a very mixed message that has come from government. First of all, the schools were going to reopen, everyone was going to go back, then it was going to be part-time, then it was going to be this blended learning. You know, we don't
but
have
do you think teachers exactly are being obstructive?
I don't think teachers are being obstructive. I think teachers are recognising that they have to protect the health of the children they teach and the health of themselves and everyone else. And one of the big issues in all of this is that when they do go back, there's going to be additional costs, additional expenses for hygiene, for additional staff and for all of that. And we don't want to see a situation where that pressure is put back on parents to provide for that.
OK, Jennifer?
91% of parents said they want their children fully back in school in September. And the subtext to that is, even if there is a risk, because the alternative is
impossible.
They're
not the ones who have to take the risk, though, are they? That's the problem.
Well, of course they are. If their children are coming home to a house that might have a granny or whatever in it, then of course they're taking the risk.
OK, Jennifer?
Teachers are not taking as great a risk as they are.
The advice from the HPSC yesterday was the department now need to sit and act on that. We've said very long, and Joe McHugh said when he was Minister for Education, we must see our children back to school. But it's not just the when they're back to school, but it's the how they're back to school. And just there is going to be a shock to those children coming back after a sustained period away. That has to be thought about as well as the when, you know, and just that could have a much bigger and longer lasting impact than anything else, and then missing a couple of weeks along division or anything else, that we have to get people back recognising the mental impact for young people on this different transition as well. And
okay.
There's a lot of thought left to go
into
this.
Mandy, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, the schools have to get back, because if they don't, the problems will get worse, not better, not just for the children, but for all of their families. But I think the Taoiseach was very clear last night in his interview on RTE that he said their aim is to get it back. And as Dr. Navarro said this morning, it's about managing that, learning from the information you're getting in the interim and planning towards doing just that.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining me this morning. That's Mandy Johnston, Martin Kenny, Jennifer Carroll McNeil and Brenda Power. It is just approaching 12 o'clock, a time to look at one or two of the headlines. As we've been discussing on this show, Northern Ireland's Deputy First Minister Michelle O'Neill and Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin has said that she adhered to social distancing guidelines at the funeral of the Republican Bobby Storey during the coronavirus pandemic. The issue is being discussed by leaders of the five main parties in Northern Ireland at a meeting today. And new figures from the health watchdog HICWA indicate that the number of deaths linked to coronavirus in Ireland may have been overestimated by about 500. Well, that is all we have time for today and indeed for this week. My thanks for listening. Today's programme was produced by Deirdre Neeline, researcher Niamh Lyons, on sound Ruth Kennington, and the series producer is Tara Campbell. It's over now to Ronan Collins.